Hey, what's up, everybody? Chad Kalick here, and welcome back to the In a Crowded Room podcast for episode number 191, which on this episode, we are going to talk a lot about the latest in the world of UAPs, UFOs, and the ongoing battle for disclosure as some pretty major things kind of went down today. I'm talking about the story that broke about the CIA and the Air Force, if you haven't heard. A new story by the Daily Mail actually came out and had several sources that are very credible that identified the United States UFO UAP crash retrieval back engineering program as being ran by the CIA and also primarily operated from select pilots and engineers from the Air Force, which this makes a ton of sense to me, and we'll get into that in a few minutes. But also, we're going to talk about Tim Burchett specifically. If you don't know who Tim Burchett is, he is the congressman from Eastern Tennessee that is leading the congressional push for disclosure. And Tim, to me, is a unique but often frustrating individual. But we're going to get into a lot about him because I would love to know if you guys ultimately trust him or not. And I have some reasons that I have pause, which I'm going to demonstrate here on this podcast as well. But before I do, just as a side note, because I literally just watched this clip a few minutes ago of Neil deGrasse Tyson, I wonder how you guys feel about him. Because he is a guy that endlessly frustrates me. Not that I think he's, you know, stupid or that he's not, who he says he is. I mean, I know he's a physicist. I do have to wonder how deep his pedigree goes just because I hear some opinions of his all the time that just make no sense to me. And I get the feeling that he caters to the public more like a reviewer, like of movies or music, than he does as a man of science. And I guess maybe that's my problem with him. I just watched this video where he was discussing the alien bodies in Mexico and his reason for not believing that they were authentic. And just to be clear, because I was going through some of my questions for the next Q&A episode, and someone had, gotta remember who it was. I will remember this person's name by the time I do the Q&A, because they sent me a couple questions that were pretty good. But one of them was basically, Chad, I can never nail you down. Sometimes I feel like I think I know how you feel about things, and then other times I feel like I'm surprised by what you think. Specifically, this person was shocked that I didn't believe in Bigfoot. But this person also mentioned the mummies, the alien mummies. So I will, on the next Q&A, I will be very clear and go down the list as to how I feel about all of this stuff, just to make at least my opinion clear to everybody. So maybe that'll help in further discussion as well. But in regards to the alien mummies, I'm not a believer. And I know they've been to a university, and that university and the Navy did some scientific tests in which they concluded that whatever these things were, these skeletons are in fact a single skeleton. They have not been pieced together with a bunch of animals or different human beings or anything. These are actual skeletons. After digging into the university that they sent the alien bodies to, I learned that it's actually, it lost its, it's not accredited. It was an accredited university for years, but like 2 years ago, 2 or 3 years ago, it lost its, ability to be called accredited. For a number of reasons, a lot of them had to do with financials. But that just gave me a lot of pause, obviously. If it's not technically an established, well-respected university, then of course I'm going to question the findings. And when it comes to the naval doctor who performed the tests on the aliens, the rumor is that he's actually a partner on this project with Jaime Masson, which again, this makes me obviously have concern. That doesn't mean that I am certain that they are fake. I'm certainly not. I am not a doctor. I am not a biologist. Having not spoken to somebody who would know how to prove if these alien mummies are real, I can't ultimately say I am certain that they are fake or I'm certain that they're not. We'll get to Neil deGrasse Tyson's thoughts here in a second, but the main reason that I don't believe they're real is just the nature in which they're handling these mummies. Like, after they just presented them to Congress, which really came out of the blue, right? Just out of the blue, everyone turned on their news and we saw, holy shit, in Mexico, they rolled out these little, paper mache looking alien bodies is what it appears to be. And I can get past the paper mache part because both are over 800 years old. So if they were mummified, they would certainly become fossilized as well. So they could, if that's the general shape of their bodies when they were alive, after they were, dead, and of course their flesh returns to the soil, as they say, if somebody mummified them and staged them to look in a certain way, I can see how they could wind up looking as they do. There's a possibility that it could be that they just came out looking like that after all these years as well. But initially, like I'm sure, like many of you probably felt, it just looked a little too close to E.T. for me. And not that I have a problem with it looking like, with them, the alien mummies, not that I have a problem with them looking like textbook, grays. That's not my issue. When I say they looked a little too much like E.T., I mean E.T. the movie. Like, they looked really similar to E.T. in the movie E.T. And to me, that just seemed kind of funny. It seemed like somebody who was a big fan of E.T., and somebody who wanted mummies to look like E.T., kind of created these things. But they say, no, that's not the case, that they were mummified corpses that were found. And to date, there are two doctors on record saying they're real. The reason I don't have a problem with them looking like garden variety grays, or at least having a lot of those kind of structures, is because we don't really know which came first as far as Hollywood's interpretation of grays or people's interpretation of grays that have been abducted. Abductees have been describing gray aliens as long as abductions have been going on. So did Hollywood copy the abduction stories, or did the abduction stories come after Hollywood started influencing society with those gray-looking aliens? I don't know the answer to that. That'd be a great thing to study, I guess. If you had the goods for real, and you knew, like, for real, you had it, then you know that you're sitting on something that is literally going to change the world forever. if I had the real deal, I wouldn't like, you know, hide it that I was going into Congress, then just, you know, drop them in Congress's lap in glass cases and then just take them home. Long before I ever got to Congress, if I knew I had the real deal, I would be seeking out the top 10, you know, scientists and biologists, the top 10 doctors, whoever it is that actually confirms that the bodies are real, whoever that person is, I would find out. And I would be sending samples to those people. I wouldn't make it hard for people to come verify. I would not be saying, anybody who wants to fly here to check this out, please come do it. I would find a way to fly people in if I had to. I would be doing anything I could to get the top medical minds in the world to come and say, yeah, without a doubt, these are real. I mean, that's if I knew they were real. Jaime Maussan didn't handle it that way. You know, like I said, he kind of kept it a secret, plopped it in Congress's lap, made a big storm in the press about it, took him home. The following day, went to a military hospital, live streamed it. And then he went to this one college that, again, is no longer accredited. And then he just started inviting people to come check it out, but not making it easy for people to come check it out. Also, I'm very surprised that if he took these bodies from Peru, why did he not present the bodies to the Peruvian Congress? Why did he not present the bodies to Peruvian doctors? I mean, this is, if real, this is a national treasure of Peru, you know, in addition to being the biggest, you know, scientific story the world has ever known. So their kind of hesitation to make it easy for, you know, well-known doctors and hospitals to prove that they were real, that's what gives me pause. That's what makes me not believe in them and not think they are real, because Jaime Maussan certainly does not seem to be going all out to try to prove that these are in fact legitimate alien bodies. You know, and, you know, things kind of move through the grapevine. I'm sure doctors across the world, you know, are speaking about this and have spoken about it. And the fact that there isn't a deluge of doctors that are crawling over each other to get to these samples, I think, you know, I think the silence can be deafening sometimes, right? Like the fact that nobody seems that interested, I think kind of demonstrates that perhaps on the inside, you know what I mean? Where all the doctors are playing inside baseball, perhaps they kind of know that it's not real. And they might even be confused with what it is or how it came to be. But the fact that, like I said, you know, doctors aren't fighting each other for the opportunity to, you know, investigate these, you know, mummified alleged alien bodies, that says a lot, guys. Again, I mean, think how massive that would be if those are real. I mean, that it rewrites all of human history. Period. Full stop. You know, that's a big deal, you know. But Neil deGrasse Tyson said that he got an invite. That's what this video is about, that he got an invite to go see the mummies. And he claimed that he turned the invite down. And by the way, it wasn't a, you know, we'll pay to bring you down here thing. It wasn't, we'll fly you in, we'll put you up in a hotel. Like I said, like I would do if they were my, you know, little alien mummies. It was just an invite should he want to come check them out. Well, keep in mind, he's a physicist. So, to his credit and what he ultimately replied, I understand why. He basically said no. He chose not to go, and he said because he felt like a biologist or a doctor of some kind should have gone in his place, that he felt like he wanted answers, and rather than, you know, him go down there and visually look at them, you know, because he couldn't offer anything other than just a gut feeling based on a visual, you know, a sighting or just looking at them. He said, no, he said, you should send it to a doctor. But I was surprised. What frustrated me is that for all the reasons that I just named, and there's more reasons that you could name as to why you wouldn't believe that they are real, he went on to just basically say he doesn't believe they're real because they had two eyes, two arms, two legs, and a nose. That they resembled human beings too much. And for reasons I don't ultimately understand, because they had those basic features, he's saying they just couldn't be real to him. That if it was a species coming from another planet, it would have to look like something nobody's ever seen. And he was like, you know, if there are species out there, you know, we probably wouldn't even be able to identify them. They'd be so different looking and so bizarre looking. And, you know, it doesn't make any sense for me to go see these little things that just look like, you know, little humans that were kind of molded to look like aliens. And I just started thinking about his argument. And I might have mentioned this even before, but this is what I don't understand. Because I've heard other doctors kind of suggest this, other physicists as well, other biologists say things like, you know, life from another planet, when it arrives here, or when it makes contact, or when that day comes, right, where our species makes contact with X species out there. I've heard a lot of people say it'll probably be so different than us, or I would expect it to be, that we probably won't even recognize it, or we'll have a hard time recognizing it, or it'll just look so disturbing and disgusting to us that, you know, it'll probably be the same as talking to a dog, or like talking to a dolphin or a whale or something. And this is what I don't understand. I mean, look, I get that. I get what they're saying. If it's from another planet, since we've never met another species that we know of, I have thoughts on that too. I think perhaps we have already, all of us. I'll tell you why later. But I get the idea that if, like I said, if they were from a different planet, they could be so incredibly different from us. If their environment only required them to have, you know, one leg, or if it was a incredibly dark and cold environment, you know, maybe, you know, their skin is a color that we've never seen, or maybe they only have one eyeball, or maybe, you know, who knows, right? But the thing that is never considered, and I don't understand why, because I'm more likely to believe the theory that they would look like us. And the reason I say that, when I say they would look like us, I don't mean like a cousin. You know what I mean? Like that man, that could be my cousin. I mean, why is it wrong, bizarre, or weird, or even scientifically incorrect to think that when it comes to intelligent beings, perhaps this is the design? Like, perhaps this is the design. If you look, you know, on planet Earth, for example, human beings are clearly the smartest species that exists on this planet. I know some would argue, right? I know. But no, legitimately, you know, we don't see, you know, dogs or whales or dolphins building rockets to go to Mars, right? We don't see them all communicating, you know, on phones that are straight out of Star Trek, where you can see faces. We're clearly leagues beyond anything else in regards to our intelligence. Now, within our species, I could show you, five pictures now of human beings in different places. You can go down to, the, oh gosh, what's that? Manute Bol and his son, Bol Bol. Both 7 foot 6, 7 foot 7 feet tall. They're from a specific tribe in Africa in which, like, the smallest person in the tribe is like a 6 foot 5 female. And you could see how, over time, where this tribe lived, they just physically adapted to their surroundings and what they would need to survive, and they look different, right? And it's the same as if you now go, look, for Russians that live in Siberia. They're going to look incredibly different than, Western Europeaners, or the French. My point being is there's still differences in how, we look and appear depending upon which part of the world, we live in or were born unto. And those are evolutionary changes, right? Like just how the body and the mind just adapt to their surroundings. So if there's life out there in the universe, why would it be so crazy to think that when it comes to intelligent life like us, and again, I think we know next to nothing when it comes to what we think we know, right? Like human beings think that they're geniuses, which I've always felt like we're not geniuses as a race. We're just way smarter than everything here. That doesn't mean that we're incredibly smart. Because the fundamental questions of the universe we still can't answer. We're not even close to them. But my thought is, like, if there's a planet that's in like whatever Zeta Reticuli, right? Like that region of stars, and it's in that Goldilocks zone. Like, why would it be crazy to think that this is what intelligent looks like? It's a big cranium, and it's two eyeballs and two arms and two legs and a mouth, and yeah, there might be differences. They might have, huge eyes like we see in these drawings of if they're on a planet that's the right temperature, but it's darker than usual. People have to strain harder to detect light. Maybe evolution creates really big eyes. If it's a planet where, I don't know, I'm just spitballing here, right? The primary food source comes from really tall trees or something. The evolution would make that species really tall, but regardless, I just don't see why it's so hard to believe that this is what an intelligent life form looks like when nature gets it right to create human beings. This is the model. Now, and the like I said, the paint job could change, the chassis can change, like all the things that kind of like modify human beings, but the basic design, I would think that it could absolutely look like us. Like aliens could absolutely look like us, kind of like in the whole Star Wars, train of thought, like when they're on Dagobah or Tatooine, and they go to the bar, and you see all these different walks of life, and they all look very weird from each other, but they all have, arms, legs, two eyes, two ears, nose, a mouth. Some of them have multiple arms and things like that, but yeah, I just think that's totally possible. And I said this a long time ago, I would not be surprised at all. In fact, I have a tendency to believe, above any other theory, that we were created by a different species that looked like us. That again, this is, it was a species that was just intelligent, and they had this design, the design that we have. And again, when I say intelligent, I mean like compared to like, you know, like I said, dolphins or, you know, whales or monkeys or, you know, we're intelligent compared to all of those things. Yeah, I just think that for me, it actually makes more sense that aliens would look very similar to us. Because I think that nature is kind of like physics. There are rules to it. And I think that it's a guess and it's just a belief, but I believe that nature would have the same guiding principles throughout the universe. So if life truly started out with, you know, hydrogen, carbon, and like proteins, and it started out as a single cell and that, you know, multiplied and eventually became, you know, a myriad of species of not only animals, but plants. And eventually down the evolutionary chain, once that design for life kicked in and life started happening, and there was a billion, you know, species of animals and plants and, you know, mammals, that all of this stuff started to be created. Like I said, when you get to the creation of a high intelligence being, you know, look in the mirror, that's the design. Anyways, I would love to know what you guys think about that. Do you guys think that that's possible? That if aliens land here in the next year or the next 6 months or whatever, and we really get a chance to look at them, would you be shocked if they looked very similar to us? Or would you expect them to look like something wild, something just like some big blob or some like, you know, walking octopus or some shit, you know? What would you guys think? Let me know in the comments. I would love to know if you guys think it's crazy to believe that aliens would look similar to us in the design. That's what I'm saying, the physical design. But deGrasse Tyson just really frustrated me because he was like, there's just no way. There's no way they could be real because they look like us, and that's what we want them to look like. Which I don't even know if that's true. I don't know that we want them to look like anything. None of us, to our knowledge, at least most of us, we've never seen aliens, man. I don't have any desire for an alien to look like me or to not look like me. I would just be stoked knowing there was intelligent life somewhere else, period. I believe that there is. I actually believe they're already here and they've been here for a long time. I don't know that, though. But I don't need them to look like me. It just makes sense to me that they would look like humans. But not to Neil deGrasse Tyson. He says no way, which frustrates me. But he frustrates me about a lot of things. Neil deGrasse Tyson is the king of talking down to whoever he's talking to. But he'll say things like he's talking to Rogan. He's like, you know, Joe, we live in a world today where everybody has a phone. Everyone has a cell phone. And that high-pitched, you know, carryover that he does with words. Everyone has a phone. And he's like, the next time you're being abducted, please snap a photo, shoot some video, bring it to me. And if it's real, I'll say they're real. It's like, come on, dude. Really? We're going to say that aliens aren't real because someone got abducted or says they got abducted and they didn't come back with iPhone footage, you know? But again, what's frustrating about that comment is he says things like, you know, in today's world, with everybody having a phone, there should be videos all the time. There should be incredible footage of UFOs that's filmed every day. And I'm kind of sitting here listening to this going, there is. There is. There's incredible footage shot every day of really interesting stuff in the sky. That makes no sense. Real UFOs are filmed on a daily basis throughout the world. Absolutely. And he's acting like it never happens. Of course it does. It does all the time. You have to be tuned into it, right? You have to be into that world. I mean, having the history that I have in the paranormal field and just, you know, being active on the web for a long time, I get sent stuff to me all the time. That's incredible. That is mind-blowing. And, you know, if you can't explain it away, you got to start considering the, quote, other, you know? And what I mean by that is, like, when the government comes forward, you know, in Congress and says, we had 750 UAP sightings. And we know it's not us. We've ruled that out. We don't believe it is Russia or China. We don't believe that it's our adversaries. So it could be potentially other. And then someone's like, well, what is other? We don't know. And they're like, well, if it's not us and it's not another country, we're kind of out of options. If it's intelligently controlled, it's got to be someone either from another planet, galaxy, or some kind of breakaway civilization that's been here all along. It's got to be, you know, one of those. Or even potentially us in the future. Or a future race of some kind that can traverse time and space. But yeah, I think there's all kinds of proof today now that there's, I shouldn't say proof, evidence today now that people have phones. But leave it to Neil deGrasse Tyson to be completely fucking clueless as to what's going on in the world today in regards to UFO reporting. But this is also the same guy, Neil deGrasse Tyson, is like, why does it seem like the majority of these UFO sightings are always happening either over water or near a military base? Well, let's see. 3/4 of the planet's fucking water, so that could be why. They're always by water, because most everyone is by water. You know, even if you're in Minnesota where there's no ocean, you got 10,000 lakes, you know what I mean? It's like there's water everywhere. And the same thing with military bases. There are military bases everywhere. You know, that argument never holds water to me when people go, well, there was a sighting, but there was a military base close by. Well, the argument that we may be flying, you know, test craft, that holds weight. But there's a military base everywhere. Everywhere. Like, what place is 500 miles away from a military base? Most cities in the world are, you know, easily within 500 miles to a military base, if not 100. I mean, Los Angeles, you know, San Diego is just down directly below us. And let's go back to Persia, Iowa. Well, that's 30 minutes away from Omaha, Strategic Air Command, SAC. You know, go to anywhere else, any other major city, you know, in America, or even small cities, they're all going to be by an Air Force base or a military base of some kind, a naval base. So, but, you know, leave it to Neil deGrasse Tyson to say that none of the sightings are real because they happen near water and, you know, they happen by bases. And he's like, well, they have to be military drones or crafts like that, because why is it that military people are always making these sightings? Well, that's who's flying around our oceans most of the time. You know, military planes, military jets, that's who spends the most time in the air, besides commercial pilots, who report seeing stuff all the time. On a daily basis, commercial pilots report seeing weird stuff in the sky on a daily basis. So again, another kind of stupid argument. Anyways, I digress. I will leave Mr. deGrasse Tyson alone, but I would love to know your guys' thoughts on Neil deGrasse Tyson. Having said that, another huge story came out today in the Daily Mail, which identified the CIA as being the agency that is running the UFO crash retrieval back engineering program, in which they basically recruit their pilots and their engineers and select individuals from the U.S. Air Force to primarily be the ones who partake in this program. Which I have to tell you guys, this makes a ton of sense to me, because this entire time I've been wondering, where in the hell is the U.S. Air Force in all of this? And my first thought was, well, if they're being quiet, they're probably being ordered to be quiet, which means they're probably involved with a lot of this, especially when you're talking about, you know, things being seen in the air and airspace. Yes, our naval aviators are totally badass, but the best pilots we have are obviously in the Air Force. And they have been, you know, mum is the word, man. The Air Force has been nowhere to be found in this entire situation. Now, the fact that the CIA would be running it, is that a shock to anybody? I mean, that's who I thought would be behind it in the first place. And they say they also use JSOC, which, if you know anything about JSOC, they're basically a private military, essentially, of just absolute badasses. And they carry out, well, reportedly, all kinds of secret programs for the government. Some of them not so, what would be the term, ethical. Supposedly JSOC is not above assassinations and getting our hands dirty, that type of thing. But the fact that the CIA would be running this program, that makes a lot of sense, especially when you talk about compartmentalism and secrecy. I mean, the CIA, like, when they're the kings of compartmentalism, they're the kings of secrecy. They, you know, created the term conspiracy theorist. They've done an incredible job of stigmatizing belief in UFOs. It just makes a ton of sense that that's who it would be. And that's where the money would be disappearing, you know. I don't know if you guys know this or not, but historically speaking, and please feel free to look into this, the CIA is a black hole for money. I mean, it is where money goes to disappear. And it has a massive budget every year, in which, like, as high as like 50 to 70% of their assets can't be accounted for. I mean, when it comes to conspiracies and questionable programs, you know, the CIA has been involved in so many, man. So many, from even, you know, weird programs, things like, you know, the Psychic Spies program, which existed and was real and lasted a long time. You know, because there were, you know, scientists and doctors within the CIA that believed specifically in mind over matter. And there was just countless experiments conducted there, you know, involving this whole, you know, the men who stare at goats. That's a CIA project. You know, they got heavily involved with psychedelics, with, you know, experiments with acid and LSD and, you know, they did this stuff for a long time. So they've always had, you know, a history kind of in the outlandish, or things considered fringe. So it would make total sense that that's what they would be doing here. When it comes to the Air Force, you know, like I said, I wish I could have, I guess, man, back in the day when I was younger, talked to my dad more about the Air Force. Like I said, guys, the only thing he ever told me is that there was one hangar in Eglin that nobody, you know, could go into. And it was made clear that, like, you're not only going to, like, lose your rank or get punished or, It could be court-martial, but, like, you know, if you went into this hangar, you could lose your life. I mean, there was armed guards in there that were protecting, you know, national secrets. Now, you know, my pops told me, if you guys don't know, my dad was an engineer for the Air Force. I was actually born on Eglin Air Force Base. You know, but my dad said, although he knew of aircraft that, you know, never made it into the public spotlight, because how this works is, you know, our government develops incredible machinery, weaponry, like amazing planes and weapons and gun systems and all this stuff, but we don't roll it out until we have a need for it. So there's a whole fleet, countless fleets of planes and experimental aircraft and all kinds of stuff that we have that we just never used, and then technology surpassed the abilities of those older crafts, and then they just get retired and no one ever sees them, and that's fine. We're moving on. That's why we keep replenishing the till, you know, and put the money that our government does into, you know, our military programs. You know, but my dad never knew about anything in regard to UFOs. That doesn't mean anything. You know, my dad, it's not like he was a 3- or 4-star general or anything like that. He was a very accomplished engineer that flew all over the world and worked on some of the best aircraft that we have, and was relied upon heavily to make sure that our pilots were taking up aircraft that were completely fit for duty and fit for battle, and, you know, ran perfectly, and you know, but he was never brought in to, you know, do anything in regards to UFOs or anything like that. But again, it does make sense to me that, you know, that's where the pilots would be recruited from, you know. One thing that's really weird is I remember with the Bob Lazar story years ago when I heard it, before I understood that there's, I mean, essentially we have two air forces because we have naval aviators, and you can be a pilot for the Navy. And but I remember what's really interesting is Bob Lazar said that when he was working out at Area 51, he said that his employer was the U.S. Navy. That's where his checks came from as well. So when all this stuff started coming out and all these comments were from the Navy and these were all naval aviators and all the laws that were, you know, being written for reporting, you know, were written by the Navy. Yeah, I just started thinking, wow, maybe Bob was dead on. And that's because there's parts of Bob Lazar's story that I totally believe, and there's parts that I think were embellished. And but once I, you know, saw all the modern reporting and all the stories and all the magazines and, you know, all the newspapers and all the news stories about, you know, these UFOs and them all being linked to the Navy, I was like, man, maybe maybe Lazar is dead on. But I would love to know what you guys think about that. Are you shocked at all that reportedly the CIA is who runs this crash retrieval back engineering UFO UAP program? And are you shocked that the majority of the personnel come from the Air Force? More than anything, I think this just answers the question about where the fuck has the Air Force been in all this? The fact that nobody, zero, not one person in the Air Force has stepped forward kind of tells you, at least tells me all I need to know. I mean, they're heavily involved. Because if the Navy is seeing, you know, UAPs and UFOs on a daily basis, like Graves says, Ryan Graves, I mean, clearly pilots for the Air Force are also seeing these things, but yet we've not heard from any of them, not one person. So that also tells me there's a different discipline over there right now. There's a different kind of restraint to being exercised within the USS Air Force. The powers that be do not want them talking, and I just say that by actions. Like I said to you guys before, when all these pilots started talking to Leslie Keene in the New York Times, I was like, this is so staged. This has to be. Because there's no way all these pilots are going to go talk about all this on their own. I mean, it would be career suicide and potentially a betrayal of national security. It could be considered treasonous if they did it on their own. And that's punishable by death. So, you know, I knew that the government has to be up to something because they're approving all of these guys to talk. Including David Grush just got approval to talk about everything that he talked about. Which I don't know if you guys saw his Rogan appearance. That was really frustrating. Because again, Grush just couldn't say anything. But anyways, yeah, let me know in the comments what you guys think about the CIA running the crash retrieval program. And if you're surprised to learn that the Air Force was involved or is heavily involved in that program. And last but not least, guys, I wanted to share my thoughts with you about Tim Burchett as some things kind of really came to light today when I was watching him speak. But I also want to hear your thoughts on him, too. What do you guys think of Tim Burchett, especially after I share my thoughts and show you what I'm going to show you? I watched the press conference today that Tim Burchett led. Now, what I think is good about Burchett is that, you know, when you talk about politicians that you just want to have a beer with, that a lot of politicians can win elections based on the fact that, a dude would want to hang out and have a beer with him, or a girl would just like to hang out and just shoot the shit with them. Like, Tim's that guy. Like, he's the dude, from Eastern Tennessee, has that, strong Southern accent. It just comes off like a good old boy. I mean that in every positive sense of the word. He comes off just like a genuine guy. But at times, he also really comes off like a hardened politician that's done a really good job of hiding that he is, in fact, a hardened politician. And the reason this bothers me is because I sincerely believe, for the person that asked in my questions, the questions to me, what is it that I do and don't believe in? Well, one of the things I 100% believe in is that the government is rolling this out. There is a plan for something big that's coming. I think it's going to come. The big event, I think, as far as, ladies and gentlemen, we are not alone, like that statement, I think all of that's going to happen around the election for a lot of different reasons, which we could talk about later. But I think that's coming. I absolutely believe there is a rollout PSYOP going on right now where the government is trying to prepare us for something big. That's definitely what it feels like. I think that's happening for sure. And in order for that to happen, it can go one of two ways. It can just happen how they're doing it, where they drop certain evidence and they release evidence and they hold press conferences and do all that stuff. Or they can have this internal battle, like what's going on right now, because it came out that like Mitch McConnell and some Republicans are trying to kill these bills that call for transparency about UAPs. But the way they're going right now is that you have this team of people that represent the public, and they're setting it up and staging it like we, the public, are about to get a win, that we're emotionally attached to Tim Burchett and his crew of, non-bipartisan supporters that just want to do what's right for the American people. It's damn time we had conspiracy, and these guys are going to lead the way. And together with their help, guys, you know, we're going to win. And that's what it kind of feels like they're staging. And I think that's maybe why they put Tim Burchett out in front. Again, he comes off as like just a normal guy that's just fed up with this damn government. And he just has this very like strong accent that comes off as, you know, very much like a cool dude, just like an everyday person. But the problem I have is when I start watching him over time, and I watch him on different networks. Some people watch all of just like they just watch Fox, right? Some people just watch CNN. I honestly, when I watch the news, I try to watch the news on as many stations as I can. Just because I think that's just the best way to kind of hear all sides. Like if there's a news story that intrigues me that comes on Fox, I will seek that story out on CNN and see how they're saying it. And then I'll go to News Nation and then go online and see what, you know, see what's up. And because of that, I've got a chance to see a lot of Tim Burchett interviews. And the thing that really scares me is, I should say scares me, but bothers me, because again, in my heart, I truly believe that the government is rolling this out and they're just, you know, they're slow milking it. We have a term for that. We're being honey-dicked. You know, I mean, I really think that's what's going on, is that we're all getting honey-dicked by the government just a little bit at a time, to make sure we're good with it. And we're all cool. But eventually, you know, they're going to drop the hammer and something big is coming. Now, if they were doing that and if they put together this group led by Tim Burchett to fight for us in Congress and to, you know, do it with the pen. The pen is mightier than the sword, and they're going to get it done and pass all these laws and all this stuff. If, in fact, this was kind of a staged group, I mean, I think the first thing that you would see is scripts. And what I mean by scripts is, you know, scripted communication. These guys saying the same things over and over again. And this has been extremely, extremely obvious with Tim Burchett. If you guys look at the screen right now, I want you to watch some of his interviews and just see how they've gone since this all began. Check this out.
I find him very believable, ma'am. He's a veteran. He served our country. Doesn't mean a lot in Washington, D.C., apparently, but in East Tennessee, it means a whole heck of a lot about people that served our country. He's decorated.
And maybe that doesn't account for much in Washington, D.C., but dadgummit, in East Tennessee, those people are the ones we hold close to our hearts.
I hear you.
When they go out, they rarely have to pay for a beer. States of America, we ought to honor our veterans. Well, at least we do in Tennessee. We might not in Washington, D.C.
The whistleblower, I know him. You know, he's a decorated veteran. I know in Washington, D.C., that doesn't mean a whole heck of a lot. But in East Tennessee, that means a whole lot. Those are the.
I mean, honestly, if it was Russia, Putin would have landed one on the White House lawn and gotten out bare-chested and wrestled the president on a unicorn or something.
And you know good and well, if Putin had a UFO, he'd land the thing on the White House lawn, probably get out, ride a unicorn bare-chested over to the president and punch him in the mouth and then ride back to Mother Russia. Putin's ego, he would have landed one of those UFOs on the White House lawn, got out bare-chested, wrestled the president, got back in his UFO and head back to Mother Russia.
You look at the tic-tac videos, not TikTok, but tic-tac like the candy.
It's called the tic-tac videos, like the candy.
And it looks like a little tic-tac candy.
Okay, so it's tic-tac, not TikTok. Just to confirm.
No, ma'am. Yeah, okay. Everybody always says, hey, yeah, these young people say, hey, boomer, it's not. Then No, it's tic-tac like the candy.
Mr. Favor, I noticed that in the tic-tac video, it's tic-tac like the candy, not TikTok like the Chinese communist app.
That's correct.
Yes, sir. I just want to make that, because my daughter corrected me on that and called me a boomer.
You know what this really reminded me of was the interviews that took place after 9/11. when they signed the Patriot Act, and it just like gave the government carte blanche, man. Just gave them, you know, the ability to do whatever the fuck they wanted to do to anybody in regards to surveillance and holding you for any time period, questioning you, anything related with terrorism. If they even smelt it, they can do whatever they wanted to you. And in trying to like sell this Patriot Act forward after it happened, there was this long video online. It was actually a part of one of the 9/11 documentaries, where you could see Condoleezza Rice, Cheney, like everybody basically saying the same line every time they would do an interview, which is, listen, we don't want the smoking gun to become the mushroom cloud. And you could literally line each of them up, Cheney, Bush, Condoleezza Rice, Rumsfeld, like all of them, they were all saying the same exact verbatim lines in every damn interview. And it was just to sell this the sense of fear that, you know, we need to give them access now or else it might be too late later. And we don't want this smoking gun to become a mushroom cloud, you know. And this just went on. And it was so obvious that they were selling this agenda. Well, that's what I see happening a lot right now with Tim Burchett. I mean, the thing about Tim Burchett, why is he out front? You know, he comes off like the average guy who's really into, you know, all of this conspiracy stuff and UFO stuff. And he's openly stated, I've been into this forever. And you could tell from his interviews, he loves being connected to like all the UFO personalities. He's always like, yeah, David Grush is a good buddy of mine. Jeremy's a good buddy of mine. George Knott's a longtime friend of mine. Like, he's always like stressing how all these guys are his friends and he loves it. And you can tell that he loves the TV. He loves being involved with things that he deems to be cool, you know. And again, he comes off as just very likable and very easy to support. And in a lot of ways, he kind of reminds me in a different way, but still in his own way, of Tom DeLonge in the beginning. Just so likable. But at the end, I think DeLonge kind of realized that he was being pimped out as a useful idiot. And I hope that's not the case with Tim Burchett, but to me, it kind of feels like they found a new useful idiot. They found a guy who doesn't really have all the facts. If you watch, you know, him talking, he says stuff all the time that is incredibly incorrect. There's been two near misses on planes with these flying squares and UFOs. And he, you know, he'll mess up and say, you know, there's 14 cases of near misses that happened. You know, or he'll look at one video. I saw in one news interview, this video came up, and it was the USS Omaha footage. And he's like, see, that footage right there is the tic-tac footage. That's what it is, right there. And it's like, no. It's like, sorry if that's a shitty, like, Southern accent. I'm trying to do my best. But it's like, no, that's not right, Mr. Burchett. It's not right. You got that detail wrong. But he gets a lot of the details wrong. He was talking about speeds that they go in one interview. And he was like, what the hell do we have that goes from 0 miles per hour to Mach 3? I mean, that's impossible. That defies physics. I'm thinking, 0 to Mach 3? SR-71 did that. I mean, that was how many years ago, man? I don't think he realized that some of these things reportedly have gone from, you know, 80,000 feet in the air to inches above the water and sea level in less than a second. Now that is truly fast. That is speeds that we're not capable of. I mean, that is faster than a bullet being fired out of a gun, man. I mean, that is just like, way faster. So he just seems like that guy to me that could really swell public support. And I'm not even saying that he's actively, or knowingly involved in a kind of rollout. I think, like DeLong, I think you could play on people's egos really easy and be like, you're leading this because you're charismatic and you're intelligent. You've had your finger on the pulse and you're just the dude, man. Like, that's what they did to Tom Long. You're him, dude. You're fucking him, dog. And he was like that guy. He was like, yes. And then he kind of realized, no, they just needed me to deliver a couple lines. And then they stole my TV idea. And I'm not even the star of it. Lou is now. And it's kind of like, checkmate, Tom. Checkmate. Time for you to go back to Blink, buddy. Go play some songs. Which I think I speak for everybody when I say we're stoked that Tom's back in Blink. New album of theirs. I'm not even a huge Blink fan, but I listened to the new album. It's actually really good. But anyways, I want to know what you guys think, because a lot of these lines that he's repeating here, you know, it could just be that it's not as intentional as, you know, the smoking gun becomes the mushroom cloud and the whole, like, we want to fight him over there. And so we don't have to fight him over here. That was another line that the Bush regime pushed as well. So maybe it's not that intentional, though. Maybe, you know, maybe Burchett just likes saying these few things, and he knows they go over well, especially giving love to his district and talking about how, you know, no one in the world gives a shit about, you know, war veterans like they do in Eastern Tennessee, you know? I mean, he looks great when he says that. It shows love to his hometown area and his home state. You know, who doesn't like somebody who supports veterans, right? I'm bringing this up because I think Burchett really knows this, that it's a patriotism is, it wins in America. Patriotism wins, and it always has, especially in, you know, debates and when running and when discussing accomplishing anything. If you could surround it, you know, around a veteran, you're going to have a much better chance of, you know, getting things done. And I think he's really leaning on that. But it's just bizarre how many things he goes back to that wouldn't seem like they're that important. Like this whole, you know, tic-tac, not tic-tac, like the software. I mean, the guy could not stop saying this shit in every interview. And it's not funny. No one's mistaking it for what it is. It's just strange. It was really strange. It very much appeared like he's got his script down, you know, like somebody met with him in the back room, like, you got your shit down, Tim? You got it? Remember? Tick-tock, tick-tack. You know, every time you got to point that out. You know, tick-tock, tick-tack. Every single time you got to point that out. You got it? Now go. It just seemed like that. It just seems like he's playing a role, you know? I hope that's not the case. There's a part of me that feels that he doesn't actively believe that he's participating in a rollout. And sometimes those people, I think, would be the best to do a rollout for an idea, right? Because then it becomes, you know, authentic when they speak. So in my heart of hearts, I feel like he probably doesn't even know that he's been recruited and he's doing something they need, that he's actually, whether he knows it or not, he's kind of working for the opposition, you know? Or he could be. That's just, you know, I don't know this for sure. I'm just saying based upon what I see. But I want to know what you guys think. What do you think about him repeating himself constantly like this? Is this just the nature of, you know, him just doing a lot of interviews and him going back to set points that he knows will work? Or do you find it odd that he is, you know, just verbatim repeating the same things over and over again as though, you know, he's following a script? And do you think that, you know, he could be doing what I suggested, just leading a group that kind of soft plays us into feeling as though that our government responded and they gave us what we wanted. You know, we put our foot down and we said, that's enough. And Tim Burgett fought for us and they got us what we wanted. Because to me, that it does seem like that's going on right now, that they're really trying to establish that as well. But I want to know what you guys think about Tim, about everything we've talked about today, about the CIA, about the Air Force, and of course, Neil deGrasse Tyson. Having said that, I hope you guys enjoyed this episode, and I will be back tomorrow, my friends, with more. All the best.